the history, when you look at popular delusions, it's impossible for me to come here this morning and give you an adequate history of mass delusions. And the reason for that is history is mass delusion. There are so many aspects to history that have involved myths and delusions, arguably the majority of history. Now, I consider myself a sympathetic skeptic. My brother goes out and makes Bigfoot footprint casts in the middle of the night and has written a couple of books on Bigfoot, to which I say, that's fine, but I have to see the body, the fossils, or bones. And some people have been critical of skeptics organizations around the world. They call them killjoys. And I think back and I think to myself, well, I believed in Santa, I believed in the Easter Bunny, and I believed in the Tooth Fairy. And I don't really think that did me much harm. I mean, I actually made money out of the Tooth Fairy. And with Santa and the Easter Bunny, I didn't do too badly either. Neither did the dentist. Now, the serious note with skepticism, I think, is that some beliefs are fun and interesting. They make life interesting, cultural diversity. But at the same time, there are beliefs out there that people hold that have very negative consequences. Just ask people who were Jewish in the 1930s and 40s in Nazi Germany. And these consequences are still happening today. You hear people look at different substances that are supposed to cause cancer and say, well, you know, everything causes cancer these days. Go ahead and have some. There may be certain substances out there that you would have to drink 1,000 cups a day for 5 years to increase your risk of getting cancer. And then there are substances out there with one exposure can potentially and very likely give you cancer later in life. And one of those things is asbestos. And I want to briefly share with you something that's going on today and a drama that is unfolding in the Northern Territory of Australia this week. And it was raised, our case, my wife is here, our case, when we were teachers in the Northern Territory of Australia, there was asbestos at our school. We raised concerns about that asbestos, and through the Freedom of Information Act, we found later that it took them nearly 3 months to remove the asbestos when they knew that school children at our school were playing with the stuff and tossing it about. Now, this is myself and my wife, and we held hands with the Indigenous community members in Ballycurrung in Central Australia when they got rid of us from that school, and then they covered this up. These three girls here may very likely die of asbestosis or mesothelioma in their 30s or 40s after having been exposed to asbestos. And it's finally being raised in Parliament in Australia. I am determined to see this case through, but the bottom line is, ignorance does have consequences, and many beliefs outside of Santa or the Tooth Fairy have very serious consequences and irrevocable consequences for these poor children of ours, our students. Now, what is a delusion? When we look at popular delusions and mass delusions, you hear people talk about mass hallucination. I don't know what mass hallucination is. I don't think there is such thing as mass hallucination. People get this confused. There are psychiatric delusions, and then there are psychological, sociological delusions. When I refer to popular delusions or mass delusions or collective delusions, I'm referring to what sociologists refer to the rapid spread of a false belief within a population typically normal, healthy people, for example, the group here. Psychiatric delusions are something very different and often involve people believing in things or seeing things that aren't there. They tend to be much more serious. And so, again, when I talk about mass delusions, we're not talking about the psychiatric delusions. We're talking about beliefs that are false. The first type of popular delusion, and there are many, that I can't get into because there are just so many out there and so many subtypes. But what I want to have here today is a conversation with you, and I want to give you an opportunity to ask questions that you might have. And I'm very mindful of the fact that I'm starting the conference off, and I want to start the conference off in a, you know, two monologues do not make a dialogue. I want to have a dialogue with you so you feel that you can ask me questions as we get toward the end of the presentation. Moral panics, and we're all familiar with, or many of you would be familiar with moral panics in particular that have occurred here in New Zealand, an overreaction by a group based on a false or exaggerated threat. They typically involve crime. I'm sorry? You can't hear me. Okay. These typically involve crime. They typically involve youth cultures. And Okay. What I'm going to do is I'm not going to use the microphone because my voice is too loud, but I'm going to increase my volume. Okay? Okay. Now, an overreaction of a group based on a false or exaggerated threat. For example, crime and cultures and gangs, in particular in New Zealand. And they typically involve children and fear of children. Threats from boy racers, threats from gangs here in New Zealand. Are these threats real? Yes, they are real. In Tuakau, New Zealand, we actually had a gang fight happen about 3 months ago, right across the road from where we live. However, in terms of the likelihood of a gang showing up today or these threats across New Zealand, I would say that these threats are exaggerated. So they are a moral panic. Perhaps the largest moral panic in the history of the world occurred with European witchcraft. It's estimated that as many as 500,000 people actually died during the witch mania in continental medieval Europe. Now, some New Zealand examples of moral panics. During the 1980s and the 1990s, you had the daycare sex abuse allegations. And here's the thing that's scary about moral panics. Moral panics, when you first hear of them, they seem to be real. For example, I can remember in the early 1980s hearing about the famous McMartin case in the United States, where there was a poor man named Ray Buckey, and he was working at a daycare center, and over 300 children at that daycare center said that he had molested those children. And I thought to myself at the time, I said, my goodness, I've never heard of a case where it's so obvious that someone is guilty. I mean, how can 300 children come up and make an allegation against somebody and it not be true? Turns out later, it wasn't true. In fact, you had one case, and then a whole bunch of other students, children hearing about this, parents contaminating in terms of asking them what happened, and it turns out that the way they interviewed children was very leading. And there have been a number of cases like this around the world and in New Zealand, and in terms of daycare sex abuse allegations, here in New Zealand, the famous Peter Ellis case. I won't go into detail, but recently, Air New Zealand and Qantas banned men from sitting next to unaccompanied children on flights of their airplanes. Now, why would they ban men from doing that?
the perceived threat from males, anyone over 20 sitting next to a children, because we hear about these things all the time. And the media is like an amplification system. The media is like a microphone that amplifies these threats. In the past, it was just telling your neighbor. And then we had telephone. And then we had radio. And then we had TV. And now we have the internet. How many times has Bill Cosby, the American comedian, died? And what Bill Cosby is doing now is, every time they come out and say he died, he comes on and he promotes his latest book. I think it's a brilliant idea. The second type are community flight panics. Now, this is when residents attempt to flee an imaginary threat. A famous example is the 1938 War of the Worlds scare. Now, on October 30th, 1938, Orson Welles broadcast a radio drama in the United States. And that drama claimed, it was an adaptation of a famous book by H.G. Wells, no relation, The War of the Worlds. And that drama made it appear as if there was a Martian invasion in New Jersey in the United States. Now here's what's interesting. It's estimated that between 1.2 and 1.7 million Americans panicked or were frightened. The vast majority were simply frightened. Perhaps a few thousand of those panicked. Now here's what's really interesting about this and many mass delusions, is that the radio described heat rays coming from these giant Martian machines. They described poison gas. They described these giant Martian machines, perhaps 30 feet tall, towering up, wading through the Jersey Palisades. And they described machine gun fire. Many people rang the police and said they could hear the machine gun fire in the background. They started choking on the poison gas. They said they could feel the heat rays. And several people actually telephoned police and said they were looking in the distance and they could see the giant Martian machines going through the Jersey Palisades. In Grover's Mill, New Jersey, which is a small town that was supposedly where the Martians had landed, it was very foggy that night, and it encouraged the ambiguity, and several people went out and fired at what they thought were the giant tripods. It turned out to be a water tower. Now, the question I have here is, was this a one-off event? No, it's not. These things keep recurring over and over again in many different forms. Now, this is a radio broadcast of an adaptation of the novel The War of the Worlds. 1944 in Chile, they actually did a similar broadcast where they mobilized the military. Now, these broadcasts were very cleverly done. They used impersonations of local political officials, Red Cross officials. It was in their local language, local dialect, and that's what made it so believable. 1949 in Quito, Ecuador was the biggest. It surpassed the one in the United States. Riots broke out when people realized, this is on the front page of the New York Times back in 1949. People were so upset when that happened, riots broke out, and they surrounded the building where they had the radio station that did the broadcast. And they started throwing Molotov cocktails and wads of burning paper at the building, breaking windows. They burned the building down. 20 people were killed, including the person who masterminded the broadcast. Now, how are they able to do this? They were able to do this because the military had left Quito to fight the Martians in the nearby town. And most of the police went as well. So there was nobody left, nobody in power to stop them. And it took days before this was finally brought under control. Buffalo, New York, 1968. They had another radio scare. The military in Canada actually mobilized. on the three bridges leading to the United States. Rhode Island, 1974. Now, this isn't an exaggeration in terms of some of these broadcasts that have happened in the United States. 1974 was a major event. Hundreds of people wrote into the FCC saying that they were very frightened by these broadcasts. Portugal, 1988 and 1998, had similar broadcasts, but the thing they have in common is they're localized, local people, local impersonations. It sounds plausible and believable to them. And it doesn't just start out by saying Martians are invading. There's usually a meteor that's been sighted, and it gradually builds and builds. Third type of mass delusion is mass wish fulfillment. And I call these moral panics in reverse. A typical example would be Virgin Mary appearances, Tasmanian tiger sightings in Australia, Yowie sightings in Australia, Moa sightings here in New Zealand. People want to believe so much that it actually comes true. And that's why I say believing is seeing. If you can believe it and it's plausible, because human perception is very poor, we kind of fill in the rest. We see what we want to see. And I'll give you an example with flying saucers in the United States. In 1947, Kenneth Arnold saw or reported seeing these objects in the sky. Now, prior to this time, there were virtually no sightings of flying saucers. People saw all sorts of things flying through the skies, but they did not describe them as saucers. Then in 1947, Kenneth Arnold reports this in the media. There was a press conference, and he said he saw these objects going through the air, moving like a saucer would if you skipped it across water. Now, the media picked that up, called them flying saucers, and there were hundreds and hundreds of reports of flying saucers during that summer of 1947, including the one near Roswell. Now, what's interesting about this is, he said their movement was like a saucer if you took it and skipped it across water. He never said they were saucer-shaped. He said they were boomerang-shaped or crescent-shaped. People didn't see boomerang-shaped objects. They saw saucers. What if Kenneth Arnold had seen and said he saw boomerang-shaped objects? I think people would have seen boomerang-shaped objects. You see what you expect to see. People were conditioned to see it, and it was the media that amplified that. Otherwise, it never would have happened. And why did he go to the media? He didn't think that they were extraterrestrials. He thought they were a Soviet secret weapon. And he wanted people to know about it. And that was the belief back then. In fact, back then, 99% of people in a Gallup poll said that they didn't believe the flying saucers were extraterrestrial. The vast majority said that they believed that they were a foreign weapon, most likely from the Soviet Union. The fourth type is what I would call immediate community threats. And now this is something that's happened here in New Zealand. The most famous case is the 1909 Zeppelin scare. Now, immediate community threats involve exaggerated feelings of danger at large, where residents are worried, they're very concerned, but they don't flee. Now, in 1909 in New Zealand, that was a very scary time, because there were fears in England that the Germans were going to invade England. Now, those fears turned out to be, World War I broke out in 1914. They were based in reality, based in real concerns that the Germans were going to become aggressive. However, there was a rumor started in New Zealand at this time that Germany was going to pick on one of the vulnerable outposts, New Zealand, and they were going to actually bomb New Zealand with Zeppelins in 1909. That was the belief. People started seeing Zeppelins. They started seeing people in airships. They claimed they could see a Kaiser hat. actually piloting the airship. There were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of sightings here in New Zealand involving, there were literally thousands of newspaper clippings. Peter Hazel of Wellington, New Zealand, and Brian Dickinson have collected over 1,000 sightings on this subject. So that's a famous example here in New Zealand. Now, what's the recipe for mass delusions? First of all, you get a spectacular initial case, like someone on South Island claiming they see a zeppelin. In reality, 85 to 90% of those sightings of zeppelins, when you look at the time mentioned in the newspaper, it corresponds with Venus, it corresponds with known astronomical bodies in that part of the sky, when they said they saw it in that part of the sky at that particular time. So, spectacular case, gets reported in the media. People start to over-scrutinize the media. They want to see, I mean, they're concerned. They wonder if it's, and they look up, and they ordinarily don't stare at stars for any length of time, and you ordinarily don't, if you hear of a Yowie report, you ordinarily don't look in the bushes and look in the forest for long periods of time. People are starting to look because they hear that spectacular initial case. They start over-scrutinizing, looking for evidence, positive or negative. People start seeing what they expect to see. Again, believing is seeing. If you can believe it and it's plausible, it's possible. Human perception is very fallible and subject to error. The human mind is not like a video cassette recorder taking in information. The human mind interprets information as it takes it in. I'll give you an example. The New Zealand Warriors. Have you ever seen a New Zealand Warriors game or any NRL game where there wasn't some knock-on where the guy didn't knock it on, but they said he did, or they raked the ball out and they said he didn't? Happens all the time. These people are trained observers, referees. They have excellent eyesight. They practice all the time. And they get it wrong every single game. I've not seen a game yet where they don't get it right. And they get it wrong in America as well, even with a replay. The War of the Worlds scare on human perceptual fallibility is an excellent example of people who saw what they expect to see. My son is Emerson. As I was putting this presentation together a couple of weeks ago, he walked into my room, changed something, clothing, walked out and shut the light off. He didn't even know I was in the room. Human perception is very fallible. And I'm not even sure it was Emerson. It might have been my other son, Jacques, because I was focused on doing my presentation. We're very fallible human beings, and that lies at the heart of popular delusions and mass delusions. And now, the concern is, with the new technology, with the internet, with newspapers, with television, they just amplify this. I don't think we're getting any better. They're just amplifying our fallibilities. Now, here's my message to you today. It's that people today often laugh at what happened in 1692 in Salem, Massachusetts. How can people be so ridiculous as to think there are witches? Well, the problem is, it happened again, didn't it? And it happened here in New Zealand. It happened in the United States. It happened in the 1980s, in the 1990s. It's still happening. And what's still happening? When you look at Salem in 1692, people being falsely accused, you have the moral panic with the Peter Ellis case and a number of other cases, and I know people are going to be talking on that later today or tomorrow. People falsely accused that didn't do things But the media, they are tried in the media, it's amplified in the media, and it becomes a social fact. Now, how do we get some closure here or some solution? There is no solution. We can't make our bodies suddenly become fallible or infallible. We just can't do it. We have to learn to live with popular delusions. So we cannot eradicate popular delusions. I would say enjoy them because we can't stop them. But what we have to do is try to identify those that are harmful and try to point those out as quickly as possible. And now right now, the organization that does that in New Zealand is the Skeptics. And I think they've done a great job. However, I would like to propose that a university in New Zealand come up with a center for the study of popular delusions. And it would have to be something that's interdisciplinary, with an array of different scientists from different disciplines. And it would be proactive in a similar way that Felicity Goodyear-Smith and her colleagues are doing with vaccine scares and vaccine rumors, which have very deadly consequences if children don't get vaccinated. They lead to deaths. In the same way that they are actively engaging the media, when they monitor the media and look for stories out there and people claiming that vaccines are harmful, we know that's not true if you look at science. That's not good science. Again, how do you recognize a popular delusion? That's the million-dollar question. When you first see them, they appear real, just like that McMartin case in the United States. Many of these cases appear indistinguishable. And you really have to look at the information and analyze the information. That's why you need a scientific organization, a group of scientists looking at these things. Now, here's a recent one. Have you ever heard of SUA? This is a huge one in the United States. But nobody calls it a popular delusion. Sudden unexplained acceleration in people's cars. Now, when I first heard that, they had this guy in a Toyota. He was going down the highway, and the police had to get in front of him and try to slow the car down. He couldn't stop the car. Now, these cars suddenly seem to be running away. The main causes, sliding floor mats, they have since been fixed. People hitting cruise control without realizing it. I've done that a couple of times. Steve Jobs with Apple Computers said that he had SUA twice. He couldn't figure it out. From his description, I'm almost certain that he accidentally hit the cruise control or forgot that he had it on. And the other one is hitting the gas instead of the brake. This Michael Fumento in the United States is a well-known reporter. He sent me this the other day. And he said, all you have to do, Robert, is put that slide up and walk away. It's perception. Gets reported in the media, and once it gets reported in the media, it becomes reality. People focus on it, and it becomes self-fulfilling. Okay, now what I'd like to do, there are just so many different aspects of mass delusions, mass hysteria. I'd like to open it up to questions. Anybody has a question on the floor? And
yep. The SUA,
got to click that up. Yep.
Was there a
check?
Yep, okay.
With the SUA, was there a recall of the Toyotas involved?
I'm not sure. In terms of, I mean, they did recall some, but in terms of just about 3-4 days ago, they come out and said now that it's their conclusion that it was psychological. Okay? I'm not an expert on SUA, but that's a recent example of one that just happened. One that when you see it, you say, well, it has to be true. But then when you take time to compile the statistics and the figures, how is that possible? Because when you actually look at it, these are the same cars. It's not the most recent cars. It's all these cars from 2000 up to 2010 today. It's those same vehicles. So why weren't they doing it in 2001, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8? All of a sudden now, someone with a 2003 car is having trouble. Why? Why all of a sudden? It's perception. Yep. I hate it because I have an American accent and it sounds like I'm screaming at people, but I don't like to use microphones because I tend to have a strong voice anyway. Okay. Another question? Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm sorry,
but okay. Can you do you have a microphone?
No, no.
Okay. Mass delusions and climate change. Does this apply to climate change? Well, first of all, there is climate change. Where I'm from, upstate New York, 10,000 years ago, it was all underwater. It was the Champlain Sea. So whether we have climate change induced by pollution, we're going to have it anyway. It's a natural part of the world. But it's a big risk if I believe that there's climate change also being caused by the massive amounts of pollution that are being put into the atmosphere. Now, I don't see any harm in trying to stop that. And we're risking the planet. What if we're wrong and what if it is having an impact? So we have to err on the side of safety for humanity, number one. But number two, yes, and I think it's people want to think that we can just keep on living the way we have and not change. But we have to change because we may be extinguishing ourselves. He has the up first in the back. Yep. Well, we address it with groups like this, with science and with universities focusing on these things. That's why I'm calling for New Zealand University to take the forefront in something like this. But my main point is this. People often seem to think education is the solution. To a certain extent it is, but it's not going to eradicate them. I mean, we're all educated here, and I would be willing to bet that at one time or another, we've all, initially anyway, believed in some type of mass delusion. So we have to go beyond that. And we have to have some type of proactive center that's going out there and investigating and going out there and researching. Yes?
Do